Monterey. For weather, it's 66 degrees out right now. We're going to see a high of 69 and a low of 53. And it is now time for Think Local First.
Welcome to the Think Local First Radio Hour. I'm your host, Andrea Conrad. I'm also the membership director of Think Local First. We are a marketing cooperative for local and independently owned businesses. For over 11 years, we've been promoting local and independently owned businesses and encouraging locals and visitors alike to shop the logo. Shop the logo if you own a local and independently owned business and are not yet members of Think Local First. Now is the time to join. Let everyone know that you're local and independent by displaying the logo at your business, on your website, in your ads, on your quotes. Business people and business memberships start as low as $125 a year. Yes, that's only $125 a year. Nonprofits are $60 a year. Become a member and get listed today in our fabulous online directory. You can find all that information at thinklocalsantacruz.org. Save the date. The Think Local First Beach Party is happening on 8-1 from 5 to 7 right here at KSCO on the outdoor patio. Our sponsors so far are the Turkey Boat, De La Comena Marketing and Catering. Whiskey Moon will be playing their great modern Americana music. And we're still working on beer and wine sponsors. So keep your ears open and keep your eyes open. We're going to be posting some more information soon. Think Local First is also going to be putting on our Indie Biz Expo. It's presented by the Santa Cruz Community Credit Union, and that's not until October, but, you know, mark it in your calendar at the Civic Auditorium. Also today, if you'd like to join the conversation, the number you need to call is 831-479-1080. And that's it I've got for house cleaning in the beginning. I'm really excited about our show today. Today, my guests have taken some time out of their very, 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 very busy schedules to join me. And why are they busy? Well, they got a bunch of shows they got to put on. Joining me today are some of the fabulous people from Santa Cruz Shakespeare. I've got Lane Jouvet, the Director of Marketing and Creative. Hello.
Hi. Hi. Everybody.
Welcome.
Thanks for having us on board.
Oh, I love having you guys here. Ariane Halon. Did I say your last name right?
Hello.
Hello. Ah, see, I blew it. All right. Ariane is dramaturg. And we'll get into that in just a little bit. And Rael Myrick Hodges.
Yes.
And you are the director of The Winter's Tale.
Yes.
Last year you directed Venus in Fur. And you've spent like over 20 years now directing, producing, curating all sorts of different creative endeavors. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm super excited to look young but have a lot of experience.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Okay, I've got fabulous women with me here today, and we're all going to talk about Santa Cruz Shakespeare, the history a little bit, and what's coming up for the season. Really quickly, a little bit from, I'm just going to intro it this way. The Times Publishing Group wrote that Santa Cruz Shakespeare will captivate audiences with summer performances that offer comedic thrills, mystic revelations, and modern twists. The festival starts with Kate Hamill's offbeat and unique adaptation of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, with performances beginning, and we'll get into that in a little bit. The second one is going to be the Comedy of Errors. Also the Shakespeare, and then the third is The Winter's Tale, and that's starting also later. Now, artistic director Mike Ryan wasn't able to make it today, but he's quoted to have said, "The plays of our 2019 season celebrate the rare and precious gift of second chances. From slapstick to high drama, mistaken identity to personal discovery, Santa Cruz Shakespeare's will enthrall audiences with stories that lead us towards hope." So that's one of my favorite four-letter words is hope. So what's coming up first is Pride and Prejudice?
That's right.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And the season begins, when are you guys opening? When does it start?
It starts July 9th.
Mm-hmm.
And we open with, the season kicks off with Pride and Prejudice, uh-huh. which is an adaptation by Kate Hamill.
Okay.
And this is not the Pride and Prejudice you think you know.
Really?
Uh-huh. This is going to be just a very fun, fast-paced, offbeat, irreverent mm-hmm. version. And wriggle its way into your heart.
So. Wriggle its way into your heart. That sounds really fascinating. Mm-hmm. So, Ariane, you're the dramaturg.
Yes, I'm the dramaturg specifically on The Winter's Tale.
Oh, on The Winter's Tale.
Every show has its own dramaturg season.
Okay, and so for our listeners out there that don't know what a dramaturg is, what does a dramaturg do?
It's a great question. It varies a little bit depending on the type of play and the type of theater company.
Okay.
Dramaturgy as a field encompasses everything from doing sort of historical research to doing new play development. Mm-hmm. At Santa Cruz Shakespeare, the way that our company does it is the dramaturg is kind of the scholar in the room.
Okay.
So when there's a question about what is in the text, what does this language mean? Can we make any edits? Because, you know, some of these plays are many hours long and we have to get them short enough that our audience doesn't hate us at the end of the evening. Mm-hmm. So I'm there, or the dramaturg is there, to answer those kinds of questions.
So we were talking about this before the show started, about cutting Shakespeare, and how is it sacrilegious to cut Shakespeare, or is it not sacrilegious to cut Shakespeare?
It really depends on who you ask. I mean, okay. I got into dramaturgy through a scholarly, an academic background.
Okay.
Right? I got involved with the festival while I was a doctoral student at UC Santa Cruz in the literature department, and I was studying Renaissance drama, and I was very excited to get a chance to work in a very hands-on way with these texts. And one of the first lessons I had to learn was that we can be precious about something as scholars, and we can see the intellectual value of something, and we can love and appreciate it. And it's one thing, though, when you're teaching that text in a classroom or you're writing a research paper about it. Mm-hmm. It's very different when you actually have to create a living, breathing work of art that you can put in front of people, that you have a whole team of artists working together to create. You have to think about things like, we only have this many actors in the company, so we have to double up some of the roles. So how do we change that?
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about how long the play is gonna go, right? We did Hamlet a couple seasons ago. That's a 4-hour play if you don't make any cuts. We had to get it down to 2.5 hours.
And so you have to choose what you cut.
Exactly. I mean, we ended up cutting what a lot of productions do. We cut the whole subplot involving Fortinbras, who is the sort of rival prince.
Okay.
Right. So it's so you lose some of the political drama that way. But on the other hand, not that many audience members, unless they're like really in love with Fortinbras for some reason, unless they're scholars of the play, may not miss it in terms of the storytelling. So the other thing that dramaturgs are really invested in is telling the story. So the idea is to bring all of our sort of academic and scholarly tools that we have and put them in service of the story.
So scissors. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, very, very judicious scissors.
So right? Does it get heated?
As in, do we have disagreements?
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine it being somewhat contentious on occasion. That's my favorite line, and then it goes away. Or is that...
I mean, there's a pause because
really long here's pause. The thing. I think the reason there's a pause is because on average, I think one would make an assumption that it would be contentious.
Right.
But the reality is every acting artist, every stage manager, every dramaturg, and the director all want what's best for that particular audience's experience of that particular show. So we're pausing because, do we have a lot of like, oh, we should keep it. Oh, it should go away. But it's not really contentious. We're just like, well, what story do we want to tell? Do we want to focus on some of these jokes in a way in terms of an homage to something? Or do we want to tell a love story? Or do we want it to push towards the comedy? And that's where the edits would come from.
Right. So it's not contentious, but the discussions do get spirited, right? Because there's a lot that's at stake. We want we want to be satisfied as theater artists that we're telling the best version of the story for our audience. We also want to make sure the audiences are not just entertained, but are able to easily follow the story that we're trying to tell, right?
Which we want to make Shakespeare sure that can be challenging for a lot of people to follow Shakespeare. I mean, I always think it takes a little bit of time. Give it like a couple minutes and then you're in the rhythm.
Well, the thing is I'm not a Shakespeare director.
Okay.
I am known as a contemporary narrative text-based director. Everyone, you know, you look at me and you think August Wilson, but the reality is that Shakespeare is a little bit easier, which we're talking a little bit offline about, which is with Shakespeare, there's a series of subplots, usually in one text, that allows a different type of focus. So you can kind of select thematically where you want to go in Shakespeare mm-hmm. that I'm discovering on my second journey with Bill. Mm-hmm. But in contemporary work, it's published, it's definitive. If a moment happens in an August Wilson play that you don't understand, you have to understand it with mm-hmm. those words.
Because you can't cut it.
There's no editing, there's no way around it. There's no subplot outside of rows and fences. Mm-hmm. So it's just a different way of going about it. I think people make an assumption about Shakespeare that they don't understand it, but it's usually because if the acting artist speaking it doesn't understand what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And luckily we don't have that problem at SES, so...
Wait, and it's always a matter, I did actually study theater way, 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 way back when, and one of the things we said about Shakespeare was that Shakespeare gave actors everything they needed in the sense of punctuation, to let you know when to pause, to let you know when to continue, to help you understand which word to hit, or just to, you know.
Even the rhythm.
Yeah.
We've had discussions, right, so far about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Shakespeare's language is incredibly rich. And it gives you, you're right, it does give you all of the information you need. And if you can follow the rhythm of the, because most of it mm-hmm. is in verse, which means it has a particular rhythm that
right.
it follows.
It's an iambic pentameter, right?
Exactly. And the iambic pentameter will let you know where the words, you know, the words that fall on the stressed syllables, mm-hmm. those tend to be the important ones.
So. We did an exercise way back when I like was in actually Comedy of Errors way back when, and the director had us... do the night before we had opening night, had us do the whole run through in exaggerated Italian accents, right? Which sounds crazy, right? But what did it do? It ended up allowing us to hit the right words because you end up flailing your hands in the air and you're swinging everything around and you're forgetting that you're doing Shakespeare. And what you end up doing is hitting that word really. It shows you where to stress it and how to bring it through. It was really an interesting experience. We did not do that on performance night, right? But it was really fun to do. So, Rael, what's it been like for you now since this is, you said you're not actually considered a Shakespeare director?
Well, it's always exciting mm-hmm. to come. My first time was, as you had stated, for Venus and Fur. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, it's a little froggy. So I did Venus and Fur mm-hmm. with Santa Cruz Shakespeare last summer. And I made a joke hoping that I would get a Shakespeare. Who would have thunk it would be here, you know, mm-hmm. only because they have a ton of incredibly talented stage directors to select from mm-hmm. every season. So I'm really excited that I get to have this opportunity for a fairly complicated text, for me at mm-hmm. least, to be able to share with this ensemble.
And so how are you and Ariane working together?
Every day.
Right? I'm at every rehearsal.
Okay.
I've been emailing and talking outside of rehearsals. Yeah, it's one of the wonderful things about dramaturgy at Santa Cruz Shakespeare is that the dramaturgs are generally in the room for every rehearsal, which is not the case with every theater company. I mean, not all theater companies use dramaturgs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But those that do, even then the it depends on how close a part of the process they can be.
Okay.
One of the things I really love about working at Santa Cruz Shakespeare is that the dramaturgy role is very collaborative. So it means being at rehearsal, working one-on-one with the directors and being available to the actors and just being a part of the bigger process, which is really exciting.
Right, because the actors will also come to you and ask you to help understand the text mm-hmm. and understand the meaning behind it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm there at the desk with my pile of books
uh-huh.
and someone will walk up and be like, what does this word mean? What mm-hmm. am I talking about here? Yeah.
And a lot of the words have changed, the meanings. And,
yes.
And we really don't know what, you know, like a bunch of sticks and all the other stuff where the words and definitions have changed according to how we use them now. So is that the stuff you cut or is that more of the stuff that you have to get the meaning behind it so that the audience doesn't get lost?
Well, even the things that we haven't cut, whatever's left in the script, mm-hmm. right? There are still often some unfamiliar words or some sort of mm-hmm. challenging turns of phrase in there. So yeah, we work on all of it.
Well, cool. Well, you know, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. For our listeners out there, you're listening to Think Local First Radio Hour, and I'm joined today by some fabulous women who are doing Santa Cruz Shakespeare. Stay tuned.
Wow, I'm standing outside the Staff of Life Natural Food Store watching choppers buzz in and out like bees at their hive on a hot summer day. I'm wondering, what do all those shoppers find at Staff of Life they can't find at the big box store? Let's ask.
Tom, I've been shopping at Staff of Life since they first opened. It's always good. Good prices, good selection. You always see people you know, like you.
Hi, my name's Kalila. They're wonderful people, and I like to give my business to the people in my community. They have a good meat department. They have a great produce department. I mean, you can't find anything like this. It's for me that it's very satisfying to shop here.
Sharon, Santa Cruz. Staff of Life has the best food. I get fresh everything I need. They have a lot of things I can't find anywhere else.
Think local first and eat local first by shopping a genuine Santa Cruz tradition. The original, locally owned Staff of Life Natural Food Store at 1266 SoCal Avenue in Santa Cruz. If you can't find it at Staff of Life, maybe you don't want to find it.
Enchanting Gardens in the Valley, a self-guided tour of seven spectacular gardens in Ben Lomond and Felton will be held Saturday, June 22nd, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Enjoy a self-guided tour of seven private gardens in Ben Lomond and Felton that are rarely open to the public. Highlights include wildlife ponds, artist studios, man sheds, lush plantings using less water, organic vegetable and flower gardens bursting in color, and so much more. Purchase $25 tickets at the Garden Company and San Lorenzo Garden Center in Santa Cruz, Scarborough Gardens in Scotts Valley, Mountain Farm and Feed and Valley Churches United in Ben Lomond. Benefiting the Valley Churches United Food Pantry, call 831-336-8258 or visit vcum.org.
And welcome back to the Think Local First Radio Hour. I'm your host, Andrea Conrad. This is, as you know, the Think Local First Radio Hour, and we're here with Santa Cruz Shakespeare, three lovely women from Santa Cruz Shakespeare. We've got Lane Jouvet, who's the director and marketing and of creative and creative. Ariane Helou, I got it right, is dramaturgy. And Rael Myrick Hodges is the director of The Winter's Tale. Last year she directed Venus in Fur. And we're here talking all about Santa Cruz Shakespeare. The first season's opening soon. First performances will be Pride and Prejudice, where you've got eight actors playing different roles throughout the evening. Next comes the Comedy of Errors. It's all about two sets of identical twins. And The Winter's Tale. You've got two kings, two kingdoms, a terribly jealousy set the stage for tragedy. But what happens next? So The Winter's Tale. I've got primarily what we've got here is the experts on The Winter's Tale. Rael is directing, and of course Ariane is doing the dramaturgy. Tell me a little bit about The Winter's Tale. I'm not that familiar with that piece. So, and our listeners may not be either. So what is it about The Winter's Tale that makes it relevant and interesting in 2019?
Oh, that's a great question in terms of the relevancy. Before I get to the relevancy, I want to say, first of all, I love this play. I'm a little obsessed with it. It is a strange play.
Okay.
It is not a comedy. It is not a tragedy. It's grouped with the comedies in the first folio. Most modern, modern critics and scholars have identified it as something called a romance, which is something that blends elements of tragedy and comedy. So it has a comic ending, right? It finds a happy ending.
So it has a light ending.
It has a lighter ending.
Not death.
No.
Everywhere, like Romeo and Juliet.
It is not Romeo and Juliet. It's not like Hamlet, where the straight stage is like strewn.
Everybody's poisoned and dying.
It's nothing that grim. It has a lot of humor and a lot of lightheartedness in it. Mm-hmm. But it does blend elements of tragedy into that. And one of the things, I think the title, The Winter's Tale, tells us something. And there are many times in the play where characters say this is like something out of an old tale. Mm-hmm. So it has a kind of fairy tale quality about it, which is really beautiful. So if you're coming to this, you know, you have to sort of be, as with all theater pieces, you have to have a sort of willing suspension of disbelief and be open to the possibility of something magical and marvelous that's going to happen. And I think, though, despite that, we can absolutely find resonance today, right? It's a story about a family.
Okay.
And the challenges that they face. It's a story about a ruler who makes some decisions that the people around him can't really support. Some of them have to figure out where their loyalties lie mm-hmm. when faced with a tyrant on the throne who's behaving erratically, saying things that don't make sense. Mm-hmm. When presented with fact, he refuses to believe it, right? This may sound familiar in 2019.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
We have, you know, we have babies taken away from their mothers, you know.
In The Winter's Tale?
There's,
yeah. We're talking about theater. Okay,
we're talking about theater.
Okay.
I'm not going to say more than that because I also don't want to spoil the show for
fine.
People who haven't seen it. And I also, as I said, it is, you know, just like real life, mm-hmm. these sometimes tragic occurrences happen in a world where people still fall in love and find joy and happiness and reunite with families. So it's, you know, in that way, it's sort of, I mean, realistic is a hard word to use when you're mm-hmm. talking about something that is fable-like in mm-hmm. quality. But it has the feelings of real life,
whole Jungian, I'm going a little bit off on a tangent, but the whole theories of fairy tales themselves being actually archetypal representations, right? Where you have a tale that actually represents, like an allegory type of way of looking at it.
Yeah, you can absolutely read this as I think one of the things that's great about the idea of allegory is that you can read it as a sort of different way of recounting the world or describing the world in which this tale was told. So you mm-hmm. can see things that have resonances in Shakespeare's lifetime and in the court of James I, mm-hmm. who is king when he wrote this play. But the beautiful thing about these kinds of works of art is that you can find those kinds of resonances all throughout history. So when you read it in your own time, you mm-hmm. can, whenever that is, whether it's now or 100 years ago or 100 years in the future, you'll still find something to connect with.
Well, that's one of the most amazing things about Shakespeare in general is, I mean, we're going on 500 years, or, right? Or we are at about just about 500 years, I think, mm-hmm. the 1609, yeah. Something like that. We're getting close. And still being performed today, being performed across all around the world, right? In different languages, translated and with modern takes on it, or old, you know, classic takes on it. And it works. It works to set Shakespeare in the 1940s, or it works to set Shakespeare in the 60s. You can do that, right?
Well, I think that any great work, I think a lot of work as we move forward, who knows what we'll see in the future, mm-hmm. but it's life is cyclical. Mm-hmm. I think all we're finding through like drama and art is that there's nothing really new under the sun. We all still like want to be loved. We all still suffer from jealousy. Mm-hmm. We all still make really stupid mistakes, even when every single friend we have in the world says, yeah, don't date that person.
Yeah.
You know, those are just tangible spaces where I think that Bill was smart and astute enough to like focus mm-hmm. versus being only caught up in what was happening in his work is timeless yeah. because it's about the heart and not timely because it's about the head.
Right, even though a lot of his work was actually mirroring what was going on at the times.
Sure,
right.
But I think what it's also reflecting is that, you know, obviously if you have a crazy leader who says crazy things, who's completely irrational, one should assume that it's probably because they're suffering from a larger part of life's cycle, like mm-hmm. ineptitude or deep sadness or mm-hmm. those things are real things.
They're like wounded children,
right?
Basically.
Exactly.
Just grown up. Yeah, I see that. So you're at the Grove.
Yes.
Yeah, we haven't talked about the Grove yet. Now I know that was kind of hot. I think you started working at the Grove in 2016.
That's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because you originally, when I first went to Santa Cruz Shakespeare, it was at UCSC on campus.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. We're going on, I think, 38 years of Shakespeare being performed in Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. and the new venue at the Grove in De La Vega Park. It's a beautiful venue. Mm-hmm. Central in Santa Cruz, easy to get to, and it's just beautiful. We have our picnic area that has sweeping views of the Monterey Bay.
Oh, beautiful.
And guests can arrive 90 minutes early.
So you can get there 90 minutes early, and why would you want to get there 90 minutes early?
Well, you can do a little picnicking, a little mm-hmm. wine, a little dining, and
right?
enjoy the views, and then come into, we have some new amenities at the Grove. We mm-hmm. have a beer garden and expanded wine
nice.
Bar. And we're now serving meals through a pre-order online. So when you purchase your tickets, you could also pre-order a meal online.
Really?
And that helps with our budget and helps prevent waste. And so we're trying to be very conscious of a number of things because we work within a budget. And if it wasn't for our members, they're a huge support for Santa Cruz Shakespeare.
Well, yeah, and actually one of the reasons why you're at the Grove is because the community... You didn't lose a year of theater at all because the community came together.
Absolutely.
Right? And raised funds and looked for solutions. And
we're here because of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, if anybody's interested in becoming a member, you have all these different creative ways of being a member of Santa
Absolutely.
Cruz Shakespeare.
There's a level that can work for you.
Right. The first one, the lowest price, it looks like a friend. It's $50 a year or $4 a month.
Right. And $50 makes an impact.
It adds up, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're different. You can go to the website, santacruzshakespeare.org, and look up memberships and get more information on that. But it is a major, Santa Cruz Shakespeare is a major community success that continues to grow. And memberships are key. It enables Santa Cruz Shakespeare to create the theater experience and provides artists the resources they need to provide, you know, quality productions. And, you know, there's the joke about the starving artist that's not really funny, right? So where do you get your actors?
Casting is national.
Okay.
And so acting artists come from all over the country. For example, I have a long history in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and it's randomly that there happens to be about 3 people from the Philadelphia
Really?
Yeah.
Did you know them?
I know them, but I mean, they auditioned, but I also, you know, it just happened that way.
Mm-hmm.
We have folks that are from Minnesota, Minneapolis, LA, Chicago, so New York.
Mm-hmm.
So the ensemble itself is national. It's also a diverse ensemble in terms of ethnicity and just orientation and background.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also an interesting way when you're also trying to celebrate commonality in Shakespeare when you're really working with an eclectic ensemble of artists, because when we talk about the realness or the hyper reality of this particular play, The Winter's Tale, which is a fairy tale, part of fairy tales is that they get real dark real quick.
They
tell real truths real quick. You know, when you Cinderella is about 2 super jealous sisters that will kill you.
And your mother's dead. I mean, if you look at Cinderella, look at the classic, and isn't it Anderson? Isn't it Hans Christian Andersen, right? I mean, their feet are being cut off, toes are being cut off, heels are being cut off, the mother
fit in
is
shoes
dead.
There is a little bit of that kind, like if you think of the fairy tale of Winter's Tale in that fashion, it's great. And when you have this eclectic ensemble of artists that you can play with, you get to have even the larger conversations that are very 21st century that do need to be grappled with. You know, we are talking about 2 different kingdoms in this, where one's called Sicilia and one's called Bohemia. So even on the most pedestrian level, there's a sentiment of needing to understand how to work together, how to love each other, how to forgive each other, how to make space for each other, and how to allow people to express the fullness of themselves. And oddly, it's interesting that Bill was able to write about that 500 years ago.
I know, isn't it fascinating?
So that's pretty exciting.
Now, the ensemble, like you said, it's very eclectic and comes from all over the United States. Are the actors in all 3 of the performances? Like, are they the ensemble for Pride and Prejudice, for The Winter's Tale, for The Comedy of Errors?
Yeah, it's the whole company is in The Winter's Tale.
Okay.
And then that group is divided between Pride and Prejudice and Comedy of Errors.
Okay.
So there are 2 smaller casts, and then everyone comes together bigger cast for The Winter's Tale. Yeah, it's really nice because everybody does get to work with everybody else in at least one of the shows.
No, if everybody's in the... And do you have volunteers, right? You have an interns? I was reading about...
We do. We have wonderful volunteers that help out in the... at the stage, at the venue, and at our admin offices, too. Mm-hmm. And they're wonderful. We wouldn't be able to pull this off without them.
Without them,
it's just a lot of helping hands. It is a real joint effort, you know, with the community.
With the community. And the interns are from, are they from local schools? And,
They're from local schools, mm-hmm. but we get applications from all over. And we have the director for the Comedy of Errors is mm-hmm. local, a local award-winning director, Kirsten Brandt. Uh-huh. So you do find also the
local towns, because mm-hmm. there is actually quite mm-hmm. a vibrant artistic community in Santa Cruz, obviously.
Yeah, well. I mean, I think that there's more of a production artist local space that I know of, but I know that even some of the interns in our plays are from other parts of the country. Mm-hmm. I think what it is being in service to this type of work and being able to grow as an artist becomes a really important part of the mm-hmm. programming here. Presenting a play is the easy part. Presenting it with a large group of people from different backgrounds with mm-hmm. different ways of working is the art. Mm-hmm. And so that's what actually happens all summer, is that Paul and Kirsten and I mm-hmm. are the lucky ones to be able to actually work with these 16 to 20 different acting artists from all over the place mm-hmm. with a production team that's super eclectic with, you know, headed by Hal. We have a great team of people at SES to be able to make this work, but it only works by being very communicative, mm-hmm. interconnected, and open to what these stories can mean mm-hmm. versus an assumption of what they do mean. So earlier when we were making jokes about the dramaturg thing, mm-hmm. I'm blessed to have someone like Ariane, mm-hmm. and I'm very lucky to have someone like Michael in the room and David Morden in the room, who are there to serve my vision of the play, mm-hmm. not their assumption of what I should think the play is mm-hmm. about. And I think we're lucky to have that at SES. That's not every place in the world. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
You have to, my experience in theater can be absolutely fabulous and wonderful and enjoyable. And then other times you just want to throttle everybody, right? Because that can happen too. You have a lot of people, a lot of diversity, and you have different personalities coming together, which sometimes goes really well. And sometimes it's a little bit more, you know, tricky to balance that out. So when you have all these people coming into Santa Cruz, they need a place to stay. And things like that, right? They're only here for the summer, right?
That's right. We have a company manager who locates housing for the artists mm-hmm. and the creative team. Mm-hmm. And that is a challenge. But again, once again, the community steps up and they mm-hmm. offer their homes.
Right, that mm-hmm. is what happens. The community opens up, sort of like having an exchange actor for the summer type right. of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And that works.
It does. And it's difficult. I mean, we know there's a housing situation.
Well, it's also, there is a housing in Santa Cruz, yeah. But they still need to be housed, and so people are opening up their guest rooms, essentially, for mm-hmm. for the summer. Now, actors also have funky hours, I would imagine, as well, right? What's your rehearsal schedule like at the moment?
We rehearse anywhere from 1 p.m. to 10 p.m., and this is why we do have three shows in repertory, and thus two plays a day on average are rehearsing. So we have a primary, so 5 hours out of the day may be my primary, which means my entire company can be available. Mm-hmm. Then another 3 to 4 hours that day may be my secondary, which means mm-hmm. there may be some actors from my company I can work with, but if they're in another show that has primary, mm-hmm. then that's how that works.
So this complicated scheduling.
Oh, it's complicated. Right. I'm telling you, you have to be a superhero and uh-huh. like an amazing human being to be part of this company, because uh-huh. the intricacy of what it takes to make this type of boat float uh-huh. is large.
Now, do you rehearse at the Grove or do you rehearse in? Because
it's too cold right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, okay.
we rehearse indoors. Okay. We rehearse actually at Pacific Collegiate School. They've been generous enough to let us use their venue as a rehearsal space.
Because you also need to block the stage, right? So that you can, it has to be all marked mm-hmm. and all that. And who does the costumes? Is that also a...
All of the designers are, some are local, some are regional, uh-huh. some are national. So the set, light, sound and mm-hmm. costume designers. Some of us share designers for a show, and some may be only on one show. Directors, we've fist fought over people, and then everyone licked their wounds and dealt with whatevs, and then you get these pleasant surprises and these new relationships that you get to develop. You know, for example,
I'm going to interrupt you really quickly because we're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk about this when we come back from the break. You're listening to the Think Local First Radio Hour. I'm your host, Andrea Conrad, and I am having a wonderful time with some wonderful ladies from Santa Cruz Shakespeare. Stay tuned.
People do not like going to the dentist unless they're going to this dentist. Hello, folks. Michael Olson here with Dr. Guy Peabody. How has healthcare changed with respect to dentistry over the past 20 years, doctor?
Well, overall, healthcare has changed in a way where people are being treated a little more like a number. So one of the things we're excited about is we get to be that blast from the past. We're more of your Marcus Welby kind of office. We know our patients. We know their family members. We don't treat them like a number, and we give them the time and the care to give them the quality result they want, and they feel well cared for.
What is the result when you've restored dental health to somebody who hasn't had any for a long time? What kind of change does that affect in them?
Well, it brings about a tremendous sense of confidence within them and peace of mind.
Call Dr. Guy Peabody for a consultation today and wake up to a beautiful smile tomorrow. 831-457-0343 or visit drpeabody.com.
Etheric Networks has been providing internet for over 12 years to the Central Coast. One of only a handful of internet service providers that signed the industry letter to the FCC supporting net neutrality and is dedicated to maintaining a secure, free, and open internet experience. Join the Etheric Network and experience our superior service. Our contracts are friendly and simple to understand. We offer predictable monthly pricing. We have local technical support that's available 7x24. Importantly, Etheric offers the same speed on upload as download. We offer a symmetric service. Call 650-399-4200 or visit etheric.net online. That's etheric.net. Etheric is a Bay Area-based company, and workers currently own 20% of our stock. We offer living wages, and our engineers are responsive. We often can install people within a week or in emergencies the next day. Call 650-399-4200 or visit etheric.net online. Don't forget to mention KSCO to receive your $239 discount on installation equipment. Happy surfing.
Hi, and welcome back to the Think Local First Radio Hour. I'm your host, Andrea Conrad. I'm also the membership director for Think Local First. If you own an independent and locally owned business, you should join us. Go to thinklocalsantacruz.org and become a member today. So we're here with Santa Cruz Shakespeare, and before the break, Rael, we were all talking about the aspect of the other people that are involved, because when you go to the theater, you see the people on the stage, but there's lighting, there's sets, there are people doing the logistics, and how you have a troupe of about, would you say, 16 to 20 actors, some of whom are in all three plays?
Two, I think, is the max.
Yeah. Okay.
For one's sanity.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Although, yes, of the main company, the actors are in two plays, but our acting interns are actually in three plays.
Right.
They do two of the main stage shows, and then they get to do their own, the Fringe production, which goes up at the end of the summer.
Which is Two Noble Kinsmen.
Yes.
Two Noble Kinsmen.
Which is another Shakespeare play.
Oh, okay. It's a less known one, though.
It's less known. It's not very frequently produced. Mm-hmm. So that's a fun challenge for them as well.
And is that an intern production then?
That's an intern production.
Okay.
Yeah.
So none of the main the SAGA actors and stuff are not in that Fringe production.
No, none of the core company. So I mean, the interns are very much part of the core company. So mm-hmm. I don't mean to.
Oh no, they're sniffing the air anyway. It's great. Oh yeah.
But in addition to being in the shows with everyone else, they tend to have smaller roles mm-hmm. in the three main shows. But then they get to take it on all themselves in the Fringe production, which is
that's great.
Really great learning experience.
And I believe the Two Noble Kinsmen has not been. This is the world premiere right here for Santa Cruz Shakespeare.
Yeah, it has never been done at our festival before.
Right.
That's correct.
Oh, excellent. Well, that's great. And I know you do a bunch of educational stuff as well.
We
right?
do. We have upcoming special events to promote the festival. And coming up the June 28th and June 29th, mm-hmm. we're doing a partnership with Kumba Jazz. Mm-hmm. And we have a Santa Cruz Shakespeare actor, Tommy Gomez, and the local acclaimed jazz ensemble, the LaBeouf Brothers.
Uh-huh.
They are going to do a retake on The Winner's Tale. So it's called A Winner's Tale Remix.
Uh-huh.
And they're performing on those evenings. So you can get the tickets at Kumbwa Jazz. And that's kumbwajazz.org. And this is a education benefit. And
The proceeds go to Santa Cruz Shakespeare and
Kumbwa Jazz.
And Kumbwa Jazz, mm-hmm. and for educational purposes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To help do that. Now, before, I do want to get back to the designer aspect of it and how you said it's like you have your actors, and then when it comes to Tech Week, right, and for those who aren't that familiar with the theater, what you're seeing on the stage, and I think people always forget this, when you're seeing on the stage are weeks and weeks and hours and hours and hours of work.
Well,
right.
It's almost, when a stage director is appointed, it can be anywhere from like 3 months to a year and a half, mm-hmm. prior to the presentation.
Just prepping.
So,
just
yeah,
getting
so
it
as
ready.
A stage director, mm-hmm. my schedule could be booked out. I have shows already for 2020 and 21, mm-hmm. that I have to put into a schedule as I think of other work.
Well,
so yeah, they're long
daunting.
Game.
Right.
It's a long game.
Mm-hmm. And I think people forget that when you're sometimes, because and actually that's what you want. You want the audience not to know there was a lot of work involved in the production, right?
That's
want it to
true.
Feel really light. Yeah, I know. It's sort of,
I personally love it when people say, oh my goodness, how much hard work was that?
Yeah, exactly. But you said during Tech Week, I loved how you put it. It was like having four new people join the ensemble because you have their lighting and you have the set director,
yes.
and the costumes and...
Yeah, so part of my process and what I try to really express to the acting artists that I work with on mm-hmm. average is that I genuinely see sound, light, set, and costume as characters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't just mean, oh, like you're dressed in the 40s and now it's this.
Mm-hmm.
What that flowing gown does at the top of a show, depending on how it's going to set our tone, makes mm-hmm. a difference.
Mm-hmm.
The sound from anything from the organic practical sounds that you need mm-hmm. in a show, that's one thing. But a lot of sound designers that I work with, we work almost off of a film noir musical score mm-hmm. culture. So I wouldn't call myself a musical theater person at all,
mm-hmm.
but I'm definitely a stage director who utilizes music as a way of conversation. I'm a baby of television, mm-hmm. you know, they're the babies of IG, but the mm-hmm. babies of television, we're used to the score of something, and there's mm-hmm. something in Shakespeare that is really served by that. So sound is a huge part. And then light is definitely a character and has always been a character. We just don't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why when you get to tech, it takes so long. Traditionally, it doesn't matter what the show is. It doesn't matter if it's Shakespeare or a one-person mm-hmm. show. The first cue for light takes 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
We still can't scientifically figure out why that happens. But inevitably, the first tech cue is a 3-hour time slot.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a real space where light and sound and set and costume
right.
are characters.
And then you have the designers for that. And then you have also the stage manager who gives the cues, I'm assuming,
yes.
right? Who makes
who
sure
I call the artistic foreman
mm-hmm.
of the show. Because okay. they're the literally the only human that knows every single thing going on with mm-hmm. a production. So... they're the artistic foreman. I have to ask permission from my stage manager to make sure I know what's going on.
Wow. Well, I think this is really exciting, what's coming up. And I do want to let everybody know that the dates are coming up. So it starts with Pride and Prejudice. I know we mentioned this before. It's adapted from the novel by Jane Austen about four unmarried daughters and few eligible bachelors to take care of those four unmarried daughters. And it says that 8 actors are playing multiple roles. I think that was really fascinating. I met someone recently who's performing in something where every night they play a different role. So they pick it out
wow.
of a hat.
Yeah, a show called Everybody, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but you don't know what character you're going to play, so you have to know if there are eight roles in the play, then you would have to know all 8 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have to switch into different ones, whether it's... I think that was really fascinating. The preview dates are Tuesday, July 9th, 2019, Wednesday, July 10th, and Thursday, July 11th. And actual official opening date is Friday, July 12th. Tickets are available. They've been available, I think, since the 15th of May. And it runs until August 31st.
September 1st, actually.
September. Oh, does it? Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Then September 1st. And then comes the, this is repertoire theater, which means you have rotating performances. Always a little confusing for people to try to, I know the 8-10s at 8 that's put on here locally, and that's repertoire theater in the sense you get A night and B night, and then A night and then B night, and then it swaps the next week, and everybody trying to explain it is sometimes very challenging. The next coming up is the Comedy of Errors, and that's where you have two sets of identical twins, and that's a funny play, full of misunderstandings and confusion about, I thought you were my husband. You're not my husband. I thought you were my wife. No. So that's actually quite a bit of fun. And that previews, the preview dates are Tuesday, July 23rd, Wednesday, July 24th, and Thursday, July 25th.
Ooh, could I mention something about
you
those
sure
preview
can.
Nights? So this year, on our preview nights, mm-hmm. Tuesday and Wednesdays, we have a special Pay What You Will.
Ooh.
So for the 2 o'clock matinee on Tuesday, Pay What You Will, starting at like $5,
okay.
You could see the show for $10. You know, you could pay $25 if you wanted. So we have that
great.
Special on Tuesday and Wednesday for the previews.
Okay.
I just wanted to promote that, and that Wednesday is a 7:30 evening time.
So. Okay, so Tuesday's a matinee, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then Wednesday's the 7:30 evening time, mm-hmm. and Thursday the 25th, that's a normal night.
That's a normal night.
Okay, so but Tuesday, the Tuesday, Wednesday...
Wednesday is a pay what you will.
And for Pride and Prejudice, the same?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fantastic. So if you don't have, you know, it's like sort of like a sliding scale.
Right.
In the sense of...
For all three productions.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So The Winter's Tale, I think I mentioned this earlier, Two Kings, Two Kingdoms, and Romance. And those preview dates are August 6th, which is a Tuesday, and August 7th. So those are the pay what you can mm-hmm. Days. And then Thursday, August 8th. And it opens officially on August 9th. And it closes also September 1st?
It closes on September 1st.
Okay.
So during August, you could see three full productions and then add a fourth with two noble kinsmen.
Oh, yeah.
So you could see a good portfolio of Shakespeare this summer.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, it's really great. And I love the fact that you're making it really accessible. You also have stuff for youth or people under the age of 18 where they get special
right.
deals
so
as well.
It's for the Comedy of Errors. So
mm-hmm.
if you buy one Groundling adult ticket,
uh-huh.
you get another youth student ticket.
Okay, so you can buy for the Comedy yeah. of Errors, you can buy a ticket, and then you can take someone under the age of 18
That's
with
right.
you.
That's right. And we have a couple of free stage readings as well that
mm-hmm.
I'll just mention real quick. We're doing The Formula.
Mm-hmm.
By Catherine Chekhovich, and that's Tuesday, July 30th.
Mm-hmm.
And The Last White Man by Bill Kane, and that's Tuesday, August 13th. And those are free. You can go online
mm-hmm.
And
you can check it out if you go to SantaCruzShakespeare.org. You have all this information listed on your webpage. And we were talking also that we could give away one set of two tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're going to give away one set of two tickets. You have to call 831-479-1080 and when those tickets are gone, they're gone. So they'll be gone really quickly, I'm assuming, when that light goes on, that we're going to have
everybody.
Those tickets gone. Great opportunity. Now, at the Grove, do you bring a blanket or is it a chair or what's it like?
We have seating.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to bring a blanket, you can.
Okay.
We have the Seroptimus of Capitola that rents out blankets and,
uh-huh.
and seating pads, and the proceeds from those rentals go to scholarships for women and young ladies. So,
oh, great. Yeah. So you're giving it back to the community
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You guys have been so busy doing all this stuff. So you said your rehearsals are going on right now. You've got 16 to 20 actors doing lots and lots of stuff and interns that are actually involved in all three productions and then have their own production run when that's over. And do you also, last year you had something in September where you had a whole week of...
We did. After the shows are close to the public, we have a week, it's called Student Matinee Week, and we
mm-hmm.
bring in students all over from the county and beyond to see the Comedy of Errors this year. It was
mm-hmm.
very successful. We had about close to 1,000 students last year.
Oh, great.
And I believe we are over our, we're going to be getting, I think maybe, it's definitely over 1,000 this year, so it's growing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been an incredible opportunity to have students see their first live play.
Yeah, a lot
at
of
the
students
Grove.
Don't get the chance. So I just want to let everybody know those tickets are gone. Somebody called and got them. And
sorry, I'm looking at my little notes here to see where we're going from here. So the production's going on, and you guys are working really closely together. You work with the other groups as well with Pride and Prejudice?
No, I have a lot of the ensemble in this work. I mean, mm-hmm. It's important for us to focus in each show. And so all of us as stage directors really respect each other's time mm-hmm. in terms of what is needed from each of those ensembles. Because mm-hmm. we're asking acting artists like, hey, so can you run home really quick, get some food, and then come back and be a totally different person in a completely different play?
That's challenging. After,
you know, so for example, with housing, a lot of us get paired up. So I'm actually living with an acting artist, and all day they're like, yeah, I'm learning all these lines for all these plays now. Mm-hmm. So there's a real just gentility and discipline that I just want to celebrate, and the fact that these actors are able to do that. The work in the room with Winter's Tale, we really are just in our first week of rehearsal for this. Because as you just stated, we open with our like big opening on the 9th with previews on the 6th. Mm-hmm. So I have a process that takes a little bit more time, perhaps, than another person.
Okay.
So each director, I think, each theater artist has their own protocol and process as an artist. But for me, I really spend a lot of time in sectionals. I think a lot of time we think that an acting artist is just about like what they can presentationally bring to the table. Mm-hmm. But if you forget that someone speaks three languages, or if you don't know that they make food, or there are other parts of the essence of a human that mm-hmm. makes up the acting artist that serves the work, that I find that if I'm able to communicate with them about what they're enjoying mm-hmm. and where they actually are, it's easier to get my work done.
Because everybody has a different process, and directors always have.
Well, I didn't go to work in, you know, like a sterile antiseptic office for a reason. If I wanted to work with people I didn't want to get to know, I would do a different job.
That makes a lot of sense.
You know, but I think sometimes for people, when we look at it as an audience through an audience lens, mm-hmm. you can watch even things on television, Netflix or a film, uh-huh. or you come see a play and you think of it just in this light space. There's 150 times the energy that it takes mm-hmm. when you have to take in another human being versus just like, oh yeah, you make my copies.
Yeah. So how do you go about that though? Bringing an ensemble together, like building those
relationships. Well, that's really on the producing of SCS. I mean, between Mike and Amy and Lane and mm-hmm. Sue and Mara, our company managers, mm-hmm. they bring an ensemble together. I serve plays, mm-hmm. you know? So as also a producing artist in the field, it has a lot to do with humility. Mm-hmm. And integrity. Mm-hmm. It has a lot to do with vision. You have to be specific. Mm-hmm. These are all things that serve a play. That's why there are so many, you know, theater directors that would make great restaurant owners and mm-hmm. bartenders and things like that.
You have to multitask.
Yeah.
But it also is a matter of, I mean, I've worked with directors that were absolutely choleric, right? That which is yell at everybody and
yeah, I bet they don't work
everybody.
As much anymore.
Well, I think the one I'm talking about has probably passed away a while ago. But yeah, it was.
But that was also a period of time.
He was a screamer, right? And I don't know how that, you know, that doesn't create necessarily an environment that is, you know, that brings people together. Now, I also know directors that spent the first half an hour warming up physically, right? Getting everybody into each other's space, having them climb all over each other so that they're comfortable and physically close, that they can use that energy. Like one of the things was, if you don't want that person to leave the room, don't let them.
Right.
And they're trying to exit the stage, yeah, right? They're trying to leave, but you don't let them. So there are different tricks, but you're also dealing with a lot of different personalities, right? One person might like being told to take two steps to the right. The other person might need to find out that they want to take two steps.
Well,
to the
I mean,
right.
what so, a process is for acting artists is really different. First mm-hmm. of all, I think we learned a lot a few years ago. If we just go back to Weinstein, if we go back to the reality of what can happen within those rooms, permission, mm-hmm. consent, aren't just about harassment.
Yeah.
It's about artistic integrity and value and what's important for you. There has to be consent in the room, not just on a physical level, but mm-hmm. on an artistic level. I'm trying things in this play as someone who may be looked at as a novice by another group of artists, uh-huh. but the acting artists in this room know enough about my vision to know that there's nothing